Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes.
All right, Craig, thank you. 4:07 on the Central Coast on this Thursday, May 23rd, 2019. You're listening to the Dave Congleton Show as we march through the afternoon. Straight ahead on today's broadcast during the 5 o'clock hour, Paul Herving is with us. His database is called Big Big Slow. He's got a database of all the local musicians and bands. So let's talk a little bit about the database and a lot about who's hot right now. Who are the favorite musicians? Who are the big bands on the Central Coast? Then Dr. Larry Martinez at 6:05. We're going to talk about this article in The Atlantic. It's called The iGen Generation. It's about the impact of the smartphone on all these young people who are currently growing up. Let's just say they're growing up in a completely different world. Not necessarily a good one. It is a Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show. This hour, we welcome back to Hometown Radio the organization Mothers for Nuclear, which means that Kristen Zaitz and Heather Madison are back with us. Ladies, nice to see you both.
Hi, Dave.
Thanks
good
for coming
to be
here.
Yeah, thanks
ready?
For having us.
We're going to cause trouble, right?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Let's remind people, first off, Heather, Mothers for Nuclear. Who are
yes,
you?
Yes, yes.
What's the group?
Well, Kristen and I started Mothers for Nuclear 3 years ago on Earth Day because we realized when we heard the announcement that Diablo Canyon was not going to relicense, that plants around the country were also shutting down nuclear plants, and that when they did, they are primarily replaced with fossil fuels. And so being two people that care a lot about environmental issues and the climate, we thought that was a step in the wrong direction, and we started wondering why that was happening.
Right. Anything you'd add to that, Kristen?
No, she got it right.
All right. But you're both employed by Diablo Canyon, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Is that a factor in all this? I ask you this each time, but I think it's relevant to the conversation. Is this self-preservation? You're trying to preserve your careers in the nuclear industry?
Yes, sometimes we give presentations to high schools and colleges, and as we talk about why we're doing this, we say, of course, you know, like, this is our job. Of course right. We want to save it, but that's usually just a joke that gets a lot of good laughs.
So what's the real answer?
The real answer is that we care about reducing emissions. Both of us grew up in environmental families and using very little resources and trying to have low impact on the earth. And we see nuclear energy as a good way to bring electricity and power to people and not impact the earth in a very negative way.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you guys always agree.
Definitely not. We have a lot of good, healthy conversations. Well, we find that a lot in nuclear.
Well, let me try this, Kristen. It's my understanding that public perception has shifted a little bit about nuclear power. Is that true?
Yeah, public perception is shifting, especially as we start having more and more dialogue about climate and action on climate, or should I say lack of action on climate, because emissions are still going up around the world. We still have over 1 billion people without access to reliable electricity. So with a growing global population and the humanitarian need to provide them energy, we also have a need to make that clean energy. And here in the United States, we think we're climate leaders, but still over half of our electricity comes from fossil fuels.
Lots of you probably heard about the Green New Deal that came out recently, and it's generating a lot of attention politically and in the media. And Kristen wrote a great article in response to that saying we need a Green New Deal that includes nuclear energy, because if we're going to tackle this climate change thing, we need every tool in our pocket.
Elaborate on that, please, Kristen. Why do we need nuclear power as part of this?
Well, we need nuclear power because we need every clean energy source to replace fossil. And around the world, we just keep adding more fossil because people have a need for reliable electricity. And even here in California, where we think we're especially green, right? The United States backs out of all of our climate commitments. But here in California, we're still going strong, right? Well, what does that look like? It still looks like we're using a majority of natural gas. Right. And natural gas is incredibly bad for the climate with methane emissions, very potent greenhouse gas.
But now we have a president who has made it very clear he wants to go back to coal.
Yeah, that's
not
kind of
coal,
scary.
But clean coal.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He wants to take us back to fossil fuels.
I think he's trying to preserve an idea of a great America and, you know, speaking to the coal communities in saying that. But he's also a supporter of nuclear and unfortunately not the other green technologies so much. But let's see.
Yeah. And so what Heather and I have come to believe after all of our research and what's happening in our energy landscape, we believe we need to use all of our clean energy resources so that we can cut emissions. So a popular way to communicate this to the public is to say, let's go renewable. But when you really look at what that means, over half of our renewables entail burning things like biomass, wood. So we think our focus should really be on going clean and emission free. And we can use nuclear, we can use hydro, we can use solar, we can use wind, geothermal, et cetera. All of those clean tools are available to us to reduce our reliance on fossil.
So you're not dismissing all the others. You just want nuclear to be included in the mix.
It's the biggest part of the mix right now. It's the majority of our clean energy in the United States. It's about 60% of our clean energy. And if we, you know, let that just kind of go away, disappear in the wayside, then all our gains with other renewables, solar and wind, are not actually gaining us anything. They're barely making up for what we're losing.
So why is it different on the West Coast? And, you know, we've got one nuclear power plant that is likely shutting down, and then I think one more up in Washington State.
Mm-hmm. Columbia.
Why are our attitudes different than what we see on the East Coast and the Midwest and the South?
Well, we have less people in general, less density, so we have less power plants of all kinds. I wouldn't say we have particularly less, you know, nuclear than...
But we only have one. We're closing it down in California.
Palo Verde in Arizona is the biggest nuclear plant in the country. Right. And they're also a really interesting case. They're the only plant that uses recycled wastewater for cooling, which is a pretty cool application.
But I don't know, Heather, I would make the argument that nuclear seems to be more popular in the rest of the country. And I'm just wondering why our attitudes are so different.
Well, California is a special case. It started, you know, back when Jane Fonda helped make the China Syndrome movie, and then two months later, the events happened at Three Mile Island. And so Hollywood has always had a special interest in nuclear, in starting, you know, with anti-war demonstrations and anti-weapons. You know, the Mothers for Peace are here, and that has continued on through the media. California has been automatically associating nuclear with bad things. So yeah. They've pushed really hard on other clean energy technologies and tended to think that we can do everything that we need with solar and wind.
Kristen, why do you think California is different than the rest of the country on nuclear?
Well, California is different. I live here and I love living here. So I don't want to say a lot of anything actually negative about California.
I'm just asking for an explanation.
Well, I guess I would say that attitudes about nuclear energy vary across the country. There are areas in the East Coast that are more supportive. There are areas that are less supportive. It just depends. Also, opinions tend to line up along political party lines. So at least in recent history, we've seen Republicans be supportive of nuclear and Democrats not so. So often, I know it was the case with me before I looked into nuclear energy, I aligned my opinions of nuclear based on what my group of friends thought about it and what my political associations thought about it. So I think that does have a big influence on people's opinions.
My guests are members of Mothers for Nuclear. You've been in business 3 years now?
Yes.
What have you gotten done, Heather? What would you point to? How have you shaped the dialogue?
We helped run a pro-nuclear march in Northern California, the March for Environmental Hope. We've traveled to Washington, D.C. multiple times to speak with legislators there on the importance of nuclear energy. We've also traveled to Sacramento. Lots of times when we're out speaking for nuclear energy, people ask us the question, Fukushima,
yeah,
like a question.
And you've been there.
So, yeah, we decided to travel there and see what it was like for ourselves. And we also plan on traveling to other nuclear sites around the country and seeing what they have to offer in terms of technologies and what they need in terms of support, because Mothers for Nuclear offers a different voice about nuclear energy. It's typically been, you know, the nuclear navy, and nuclear power plants are run by lots of men, and women have have been more scared of nuclear energy. So we're here to offer the motherly side of nuclear, nuclear for the future, for our children, for the planet.
Yeah. Kristen, what do you think you've gotten done in the last 3 years?
Well, I would agree with everything that Heather said. Dave, that's not quite fair to ask me after Heather's answer because she says it all. But I'd say a big thing we did was...
Next segment, I'm starting with you each time.
No. Okay. Going to Fukushima was really a big deal for both of us. We got to see firsthand, you know, the word that people have been spouting at us for a few years, Fukushima, Fukushima. And we got to really take a look at it with our own eyes. I got less radiation there going right by the damaged reactor than I did on the plane flight there and back. So... And we got to talk with people in the region and farmers and local politicians, and we got to see the impact that fear of radiation has on their society. You know, people are being discriminated against. Farmers and fishermen are not able to sell their products in markets because of the stigma associated with radiation. So I think fear of radiation, we've seen it to be very damaging, and we want to help people understand what it is.
Can anybody join your group?
Anyone can join our group.
All right. I mean, is it just the two of you?
We have a website where people can join our email list, which is currently over 1,000. We have a Facebook following of about 1,500 people. We have Twitter followers and lots of other social media.
So you have
media.
People following you. You have people participating in a dialogue with you.
Yes.
All right. Fair enough. All right. They're here for the hour. We have Heather Madison and Kristen Zaitz on this broadcast. The group is Mothers for Peace. What's the website?
Mothersfornuclear.org. We are mothersfornuclear.org.
There we go. We'll be back and chat some more. Your phone call still to come. I'm Dave Congleton. We're live. We're local. We're Hometown Radio. On Tuesday, we'll sit down with the police chief of San Luis Obispo, Chief Deanna Cantrell, and find out what kind of year it was fighting crime in San Luis Obispo. Also, Sean McEnany will be with us. He served on a jury. He's going to share with us the experience. Sounds like it was a pretty interesting trial. We're here weekday afternoons from 3 to 7 on AM 920, FM 96.5 News Talk, KVEC. You're listening to the Dave Congleton Show. My guests this hour represent a group called Mothers for Nuclear. Kristen Zaitz is here. Heather Madison here as well. Off the Stolberg Law KVEC text line, a question. Currently in California, what percentage of our electricity is generated by solar and wind together versus nuclear? Who can answer that?
So there's a really interesting app that you can get on my iPhone right now. It's called ISO, Cal ISO, and it shows you real-time data about the energy that's being used in California, and it shows right now our current demand is 2,300 megawatts, and that renewables are 39% of that, so a little bit less than half. Most of that is solar. About half of the renewables is solar, and then about a quarter of it is wind.
How do we compare to other states? Any sense? I mean, is that high?
California is really high on solar, and during the day, I think we blow most other places out of the water, out of the sun. But during the night, Dave, we have the same solar as everywhere else, which is none.
But we have storage.
Mm.
We store solar, even I know that. Come on.
Where do you store it? You know, we've gotten interesting, people have told us interesting things around storage of solar. They say, we just put the energy onto the grid and the grid will store it for us. That is not so. The power on the grid has to be the same as the power that's consumed at all times. So even though you might feel great generating that clean energy during the day using your solar panels, you don't get to use that clean energy at night. You're using the same energy as everyone else, which is mostly natural gas.
I defer to the two of you, but the obvious question to me is, what's wrong with shifting towards solar? I mean, we grew up with fossil fuels and nuclear. We seem to be phasing that out, at least in California, and going towards solar. Why is that? What's wrong with that?
Solar's great for when solar is available. Like I mentioned, it's here when the sun is shining. But for the evening, that's when most people start using energy, is when they come home from work. They turn on their ovens to cook. They run the washing machine. In the Central Valley, they turn on air conditioning, which is, you know, really important for keeping people comfortable. And right around that time, the sun is setting, so there's no more solar energy. And if we want to talk about storage, that's an interesting question, because most people think about batteries as being storage. So that's a part of it, but the idea of pumped hydro is actually a much better and more utilized method of storing energy. Right now, it's about 99% of our total storage
worldwide.
Well, we might as well get this out. If you want to talk about storage, what about storage involving nuclear waste?
What about it? Has it ever affected you?
I don't know.
It hasn't.
I don't know.
Yeah. How big is it?
I don't know.
It's pretty small.
I'm just the average person.
Yeah. Is it completely contained?
Yes, it is.
I don't know.
Is it a green glowing goo?
No. You know what? The Simpsons taught me that it was a green glowing goo, but when I learned more about it, I learned that it's a solid, and the way it's stored, at least for now, is it's either stored in pools underwater or it's stored in dry storage casks. And those storage casks sit there, and there's no mechanical or electrical system needed to make them function. They just sit there containing the used fuel, and it naturally cools down. It's completely contained, it's isolated, and it's monitored.
And how long is that going to be there?
As long as we keep it there, we can move it, we can do whatever the Department of Energy decides is the right solution for nuclear waste.
How long is the landfill going to be there? Are we trying to clean that up?
I'm not worried about the landfill.
It's just there, though. That's where we dispose of our waste. But why would nuclear fuel be any different?
Well, the prime example is Yucca Mountain. Mm-hmm. And we had storage there, and then it started leaking into the Colorado River. And there were reports of people suffering because of what had leaked from Yucca Mountain.
I don't know about that particular issue. I know there's lots of old weapons facilities in Northern California that have left over like mining tailings that have contaminated some like native areas that lots of people are really upset about, but that don't necessarily affect human health. So we need to really look at all those impacts.
You're both mothers. Would you build houses next to the nuclear waste storage?
I think we have to differentiate between nuclear weapons waste and nuclear energy waste. So
there's a difference?
Heather and I are talking about nuclear energy waste. Yes, there's a difference.
What's the difference, Kristen?
There's a lot of nuclear weapons waste that's left over from the 1950s that was poorly managed, and those are large cleanup sites around the country. So that's a completely separate topic, but we're talking about nuclear energy, which is stored in a contained and isolated and monitored way.
And as long as it's done that way, it's safe in your professional opinion.
Yes.
Again, I don't know. This is just what I read. This is what I hear. This is what people are concerned about.
Yeah, the thing about it is that every energy source has a waste product. And we feel strongly that we need to manage the impacts of those wastes on our environment. So the good thing about nuclear is that the waste that's created is very small. And as I said, monitored and isolated, and so it's not hurting people. But there's lots of other forms of waste, like let's just say fossil, for example. Fossil fuels spew pollution and emissions out into the environment. People are breathing the air, and the carbon is warming our earth.
I'm not about to defend fossil fuels.
Excellent.
All right. Again, Heather, the website for Mothers for Nuclear would
be? .org. Mothersfornuclear.org.
All right. We've got Heather Madison and Kristen Zaitz on this broadcast. We have news, traffic, weather, your phone call straight ahead. This is the Dave Congleton Show. You have landed on the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show, where we continue our discussion with representatives of the group Mothers for Nuclear. We have Heather Madison and Kristen Zaitz on this broadcast. They're both mothers, and they're both for nuclear power, and they're both environmentalists. They say that nuclear is the answer, right? It's the answer, more so than solar, just to put perspective on it again. More emphasis on solar at the expense of nuclear, or more on nuclear at the expense of solar?
We need everything. We need to throw everything we have at this climate crisis. Governments around the world are starting to declare official emergencies about the climate. And we started this group because we see that when existing nuclear plants with no emissions shut down, they're replaced with fossil fuels, which have emissions. And that is exactly the direction we do not want to be going in.
If you want to join us, please pick up the phone. Give us a call. Phone lines are open. 805 543-8830 or 800-549-5832. As we talk with members of Mothers for Nuclear, what happened in Pennsylvania?
Well, around the country, we mentioned earlier that plants are at risk of premature closure mostly due to policies that don't credit them for their carbon-free energy generation, and also due to the low price of fracked natural gas. So recently in Pennsylvania, a bill was proposed to credit the nuclear plants there that are struggling for their clean energy generation. However, that bill was not even introduced. They had the votes to get it passed, but it wasn't introduced, and therefore Three Mile Island is now scheduled to close down.
All right, let's take some phone calls. We start with John in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi.
It's kind of nice to hear a little bit of sanity about nuclear power for a change. A little background, I worked with Diablo Canyon doing training for them a couple years ago, and I have to say, with my experience with those people, they are some of the best and brightest in the country. Most people also don't know that Diablo Canyon is the model site for how to run a nuclear power plant. Nuclear power plants all over the country use them as the model for how to do it right. So I'm struggling mightily with the fact that the state is foolish enough to think they should close it and that they'll be able to somehow make up for all the energy that Diablo provides.
Christy, you want to comment?
Yeah, I agree 100%. Diablo Canyon is a great place, and we're lucky to have it in our area.
John, what else from you?
That's pretty much it. I just wish people understood what they were talking about and didn't just fly off the handle based on some crazy reaction because it's nuclear, it's bad.
I'm glad you called, John. Thank you very much. Mark is in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark. A great show. I was reading Bill Gates is even backing, it's called TerraPower on molten chloride fast reactor. China, Denmark, and a lot of countries are looking into these salt reactors, and they're going to be smaller reactors.
Right.
We have enough waste just from our hospitals and existing plants. If we could recycle it to power the United States for 300 years without doing any more mining, China has, they're spending tens of billions of dollars on their breakthrough of nuclear because solar will not be their answer, and electric cars will be their answer. But I think, from what I can read, there seems to be a renewed interest by a lot of Western countries, and they're doing the research. Bill Gates is generally on the front edge of most things, and I just thought that was kind of an interesting note to add, that he's looking and backing with his own money some of the research. Anyway, great show.
Well, Mark, thanks for calling in. Do we know anything about Bill Gates and nuclear? Does that surprise you?
Yeah, there's a number of really exciting nuclear startups like that, a few different technologies. So what Heather and I see as the need to address the climate crisis is to keep existing nuclear plants open, to build more nuclear plants, and then to innovate and deploy advanced reactor technologies like the one that Bill Gates is innovating and now working on in China. But we have a lot of other startups here in the United States that have some really exciting ideas.
All right, let's go to Pete in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Hi.
Let's see. I heard some of the broadcast, and, of course, if all the problems can be solved, that's dandy. But I was part of the blockade of Diablo a few years ago, and back then we were asking about the waste, and, of course, their only answer was, well, by the time we have a significant amount, we will have that figured out. So I think that's an ongoing issue, as far as I know. Have you addressed that during your talk today?
We talked a little bit about that. What's your concern about the waste, Pete?
Where do you put it? There's been numerous, efforts to put it here, put it there, put it in barrels, bury it in the sea, bury it in deep caves, this, that, the other thing. I don't think any really good solutions even come up.
Pete, where do you put your garbage, and where do you put your plastic waste?
This is different. That's not radioactive.
It's still really damaging to the environment.
An accident at a nuclear plant is a lot worse than an explosion at an oil plant. Not that I like those, but...
Yeah, I don't know. The surprising thing Pete, that we found out was that nuclear is actually the safest way to make reliable electricity. When you look at even the consequences of the worst accidents we've ever had, just any other energy source ends up, in the long run, killing more people, whether it's due to air pollution, whether it's due to industrial accidents, et cetera. You know, outdoor air pollution kills over 8 million people per year.
Pete.
Well, right. I think we were lucky at Three Mile Island. Even Chernobyl could have been much worse. Fukushima could have been much worse. And so that should raise our awareness. It could have been much worse.
All right, Pete, thanks for the call. All right, gives you three examples. Mm-hmm. Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, Fukushima. Where is
everyone's heard of those three examples. Those are the three nuclear examples. But if you even start talking about fossil plants, Pete mentioned those exploding. They explode all the time. They don't even make the news anymore. Mm-hmm. Natural gas pipelines explode all the time. Those don't even make the news sometimes. So other technologies are hurting a lot more people, and we're just not really hearing about it.
The Mothers for Nuclear on Hometown Radio. Welcome to your phone calls, 805-543-8830, 800-549-5832. We go to Don in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Don.
Hey.
Hi.
I think there's a lot of misinformation and fear. For example, you just said about leakage out of Yucca. If you'll check some sites or even Wikipedia, there's never been any waste put into Yucca Mountain. It was stopped as a project by Obama after $27 billion collected from the utilities was spent studying it. It was stopped because there were additional faults and fissures that opponents were worried about. So what you just put across your huge broadcast area, leakage into the Colorado River, it never happened because there was never any waste put into Yucca. It's an unfinished project stopped at midpoint.
Then what was leaked?
That sort of fear and misunderstanding.
What was leaked into the Colorado River then?
Absolutely nothing. You need to go do a little research. I think there was a fear because one of the faults was found to be several hundred feet closer than was expected, kind of like the fault fear that we have over Diablo. But there's never anything put in there. And so people are broadcasting area-wide that there was leakage in the Colorado River. I didn't think that was right, Dave, and so I read as many sites as I could while I was waiting in queue here.
We're also on our smartphones here and trying to find information, and what we found shows that there's natural uranium from the surrounding rock leaking in, and natural uranium is in the rock all around us. It's a naturally occurring element, and in some locations, it's at higher concentrations than others.
Here's the Los Angeles Times, April 20th, 1997. The headline is "Leaking Nuclear Waste Imperils Colorado River." Reporter is Frank Clifford.
I'm sorry, that disagrees with all the other evidence that I just researched. I can't account for that article, sir.
And I can't account for what you're reading. I guess we're reading different things. And all I'm doing. Don is bringing this up so that my guest experts can respond to it, which is what they have done. Because if I've heard this, then I suspect other people have heard it too. So that's why we have these conversations, so we can try to separate fact from fiction. That's all.
Yes, sir.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
The fact is that back in the 50s, when the government was developing nuclear weapons, they did a lot of mining in a lot of areas in northern Arizona and Utah and New Mexico, and they were not very careful with any of their mining operations, and they left a lot of messes behind that are still, you know, bothering the people, the native people that live there. They're still a worry because they see, you know, piles of tailings that aren't contained, and that's, you know, a constant source of worry for them.
Let me just quote the article. Again, it's 1997. The owner of the mill site, and this is talking about Yucca Mountain, concedes that the plan to cap the tailings pile in place won't entirely stop nuclear waste and other hazardous material from seeping into the Colorado River.
Yeah, so the mill and the tailings are a result of mining operations. I grew up in Arizona.
Right.
I came from a little mining town, copper mining, and I can attest to how dangerous and polluting mining is. Tailings are awful. They're blowing all around our town all day. That's the scenery in my hometown of Globe is tailings piles.
Why did Obama stop Yucca Mountain? Do we know?
a lot of money and a lot of time have gone into Yucca Mountain, and it's been a political decision whether to start or stop it. But I think the lesson we can all learn from that decades-long debacle is that it's not a good idea to create a nuclear waste repository in a community that does not want it. We need a consent-based siting process so that we can store our used nuclear fuel and other nuclear wastes in areas where communities would welcome the economic benefits.
All right, Don, thank you for calling. Let's go to Rob in Paso. Hey, Rob.
Hello.
Hi, Rob.
Hey, ladies, I'm so glad to hear you talking about this. I'm curious about the economics of the nuclear. I think I understand why Diablo is shutting down. PG&E basically says it's an economic decision, but I find that hard to believe that you have an existing plant that's got a lot of life left and you can't afford to continue to operate it. So there must be something else going on there. And I thought maybe you could talk a bit about just the economics of nuclear in general. Why is it having trouble? Is it just the natural gas, or is it some of these political issues?
Good question.
It's both. It's a combination of so many things, but you hit the nail right on the head. It's not that we don't need the energy, though. Something kind of unusual is happening in California, where PG&E, big utilities, you know, people are having a little trouble trusting right now, and so lots of people are leaving PG&E in favor of smaller energy programs, community choice programs. And when that happens, you know, PG&E is losing customers. So they have a much smaller customer base for which to provide energy to. And due to state policies, we just passed one, SB 350, I think, that says we should get to 50% renewables in 2045. So in order to do that, you know, PG&E is supposed to get to 50% of qualified renewables. And so that's a kind of narrow definition. If they keep Diablo Canyon, which is such a large source of clean energy, but not qualified renewables, then there's not actually enough, you know, extra space to get to 50% renewables in, you know, their remaining customer base.
So that's a really ridiculous situation that we're in, is that we're in the position where we're about to kick off a large clean energy generator in favor of other clean energy. But the fact remains that we're using and burning a majority of natural gas. The way that clean energy plans, no matter what program you're buying it through, the way they're saying that they're providing 100% clean energy isn't actually giving you clean energy electrons on the grid. They're paying for paper credits. So they're paying someone else to say that they are using clean energy, when in reality we're burning natural gas here.
What else, Rob? Anything else you want to say?
No, I was just wondering, why is it just then, it's not just flaky California, this is a problem in other areas too, that nuclear can't manage it economically?
Yeah, there's a lot of market policies that have been designed around promoting renewables. For example, in the Midwest, there's a lot of wind energy, which has a production tax credit. So even at night, when no one's really using power, they get paid, wind gets paid to put electricity onto the grid, even if no one's using it. So that forces all the other resources on the grid to back down. Fossil plants are good at doing that. They can ramp offline, but nuclear plants stay online, and all of a sudden their power is not worth anything.
All right, Rob, thanks for calling in. We are joined in conversation by Kristen Zeitz and Heather Madison from Mothers for Nuclear. If you want in on this conversation, we need to hear from you now, please. 800-549-5832, 805-543-8830. David is in Oceano on KVEC. Hey, David.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to kind of help answer that last gentleman's question. I think part of the reason that companies are getting out of nuclear is the liability and the ultimate cost of storage of the nuclear waste.
We disagree.
It's not viable.
You know, one of the neat things about nuclear energy is that the customers who are paying for the cost of generating that electricity, they're also paying for the cost of decommissioning the power plant. So right now, if you look at your bill from PG&E or whoever you get it from, there's a cost for the electricity generation, and then there's also a small fee you pay for nuclear decommissioning. So the people who are using the power are paying for the full life cycle. There aren't other energy sources that do that. You know, they'll they'll produce the electricity, and then we're left with waste sites to clean up. That's not the case with nuclear energy.
David.
Let me ask you this. How much does it cost each year to monitor all the nuclear waste that's at Diablo Canyon on an annual basis?
Our dry cask storage are up on the dry casks are in storage up on the hill, and there's a fence around them.
So how much does it cost each year?
There's no active systems that need to run for that fuel to sit there. They are, you know, closed off from the public, but
there's no cost.
There will be some security because lots of people are scared and feel like security is an issue, but it's not actually.
Do you have any estimate whatsoever what it costs? It's not just free. That's not realistic because there's the land cost, there's the monitoring, you have to have security, and then do you have any idea what the cost is? You're talking like you're experts, but do you have any idea what the cost is?
Well, as Kristen mentioned, she works in the decommissioning organization, and she's aware of how the costs are.
Can you give me a figure for the year, and then I'll make my point?
I'm not going to give you a figure for the year, but when we have either an interim storage facility or a long-term waste repository, the fuel will go there. When we have it currently, you know, at sites around the country, they'll need a few security guards to sit and monitor the security.
So what's your point, David?
Well, the point is it's going to at least cost, tens of thousands of dollars a year, even if you just consider the cost of one security guard. Then you multiply that to times the amount of years that will last. That's times tens of thousands or thousands of years. So the amount of money it costs is phenomenal in the long term. If a company is looking, or even a society or a culture is looking at the cost, there's no way it's going to cost billions and billions and billions of dollars more for the long term monitoring of all the waste than they could possibly ever, you know, generate through electricity. So it's just unviable, and it's just coming to a conclusion. That's and also the liability. You're downplaying the liability aspects that PG&E.
How serious is the liability issue, ladies?
Depends on how we want the legal system to be in the future, because liability is a function of the legal decisions that we make. But I will say that, the long-term monitoring question, it's kind of what I just heard. I understand, and a lot of people, I can understand how a lot of people would have that view. But we can't assume that we're going to do business in the future the exact same way we're doing business now. There are lots of exciting ways we can use nuclear fuel in the future. It's not all used. There's a ton of energy there that we can recycle, reprocess, and use for the nuclear plants of the future.
All right, David, thank you. Let's squeeze in Jay as our last caller on KVEC. Hi, Jay.
Hello, Dave. Appreciate the time. And I'm a new caller here and listening to your show primarily just to become informed, as I'm not a very informed caller at this point. But I'm curious your opinion or thoughts or those of your guests there on security issues with the proliferation of possibly more nuclear energy. What are your guys' thoughts on if or when could that fall into the wrong hands? Could that be used for some type of nefarious act or something? What are your thoughts on that subject?
Any danger of nuclear power being used for...
You know, I think it's a great subject for Hollywood, and we've seen a lot out of Hollywood in that respect. And
Jane Fonda's still around. We can make another movie with Jane Fonda.
Yeah, that's right. But, the fact is, once the fuel is irradiated, it's highly radioactive. You can't just go in there and grab it. So it would take a very, very creative scenario to take that. And it would, I think, be more like a Darwin Awards scenario.
Jane?
Yeah, I guess my concerns just were, or not concerns, just curious your thoughts, but since there's more of it out there, it might be that easier to come by or something to that effect.
Fair enough. I'm glad you called, Jay. Thank you. We'll come back and wrap things up with my guests. I'm Dave Congleton on AM 920, FM 96.5 News Talk, KVEC. Top of the hour, ABC Radio News. Then Paul Irving joins us in Big, Big Slow. We're in our remaining minutes here with Kristen Zeitz, Heather Madison. What didn't we cover, ladies, we wanted to make sure we get to? What do you think of the calls? Where are they wrong? Or are they right? Most of them agreed with you.
But, Dave, you were wrong about the nuclear waste at Yucca Mountain. It was weapons waste you were talking about. And it was
waste
from
is
mining.
Waste is waste.
Yeah, and we have landfills, and we have pollution in the air, and we have a lot of waste to manage, and that's something that we need to get a lot better at.
But if we have more nuclear power plants, we have more nuclear waste.
Nuclear waste is really small, and it's completely contained.
On the KVC text line, there was some. Let me see if I can find this one. Who will maintain the waste if PG&E goes under at Diablo Canyon?
Whoever, if PG&E goes under, they will not be able to relinquish their responsibility to manage the nuclear waste at Diablo Canyon.
And was there any environmental impact of what happened at Fukushima?
A lot of the environmental impact came from the cleanup efforts where they scraped off a bunch of topsoil when they were trying to clean the area up to very, very low radiation levels, which now they know is not necessary.
Also, the environmental damage was due to the tsunami that killed 18,000 people.
18,000 people, yeah, and the salt water intrusion, you know, that brought, it spread salt water all over their farmland.
They couldn't grow crops for multiple years because of the salty soil.
Heather, what's the website for Mothers for Nuclear?
Mothersfornuclear.org. We're also on Facebook.
Do you have any events coming up? Anything?
Heather's going to China.
Really?
Yeah, I was invited to speak at a conference in China. As you mentioned before, Kristen, they're building lots of new reactors. I'm excited to go see what they're doing over there. And they want to hear from us about communicating about nuclear in a different way, a more human way.
Nice job, ladies. Kristen, final thoughts?
Well, I think that the thing I'd like to see from our community is a little bit more hope around nuclear in general and specifically around Diablo Canyon. It's 2019.
It's too late, but it's too late. Guys are leaving.
The operating licenses,
Train's leaving the station.
They expire in 2024 and 2025. There's time for California to do the right thing.
If you care about clean energy, tell your friends, tell your legislators that nuclear energy is a big part of it.
So you want to keep Diablo Canyon open?
Of course.
We want to keep all existing nuclear plants open. We want to build more, and we want to deploy advanced reactors.
You got more calls than Gene Nelson. Good job. Thank
Thanks.
You, ladies. Off we go. We got news, traffic, weather. Paul Irving is in the house. This is Hometown Radio.